give the performance art involved in this, but essentially I had said yesterday that the committee we would talk about Zareya by yesterday, we start Zareya yesterday. So essentially what happened was that we got up to it about a minute before Shir was over. So we said a few words about Zareya, and that was it. So my question for you is, did we talk about Zareya yesterday? So that's going to be totally on the understanding of how the Malacha of Zareya works. So yes, we can now retroactively say it was all set up on purpose in order to make that point. So we'll today look a little bit at that question of how exactly the Malacha of Zareya plays out, which will retroactively define whether or not we ended up discussing Zareya yesterday. So just in terms of what we did do yesterday, so we did essentially finish off our introductory discussions. So I just want to recap the point that's most relevant to getting us into a focused understanding of Zareya. So we spent some time talking about the question of whether malachos are focused on the rest of the individual, meaning the person being at rest, because perhaps of the pasuk l'man yanuach. The Torah tells us in the Aseret Dibros that the purpose of the malachos is that the individual should be at rest. So is that our focus? Or are we concerned about malachos themselves, that malachos shouldn't happen? And we could roughly, perhaps somewhat clumsily, phrase that as Nisr Gavra, Nisr Chetzlis, last Maisha question. We discussed a little bit whether or not that's the right terminology. And then we went through some of the different cases and some of the different proof texts that come into this discussion, because it was a debate. There was a strong school of thought, headed perhaps in terms of prominent names by the Chassam Sofer, who maintained that really Shabbos is all about your being at rest, and therefore on a Torah level there's no concept of shlichus when it comes to Shabbos. Shabbos is all about what you're doing or not doing. If you provoke malacha through some other mechanism or through some other person, that's not called a violation of your rest. And there were others who didn't feel that way. You mentioned that Ruzevin has an essay in which he goes through some of the perspectives, and that he tilts towards thinking it's not just about you, but it is about the environment, about not having malachos take place, about Shabbos itself having its own existence of avoiding malacha, regardless of what you are doing. And he brought proofs to his perspective. And what we tried to suggest as an approach which accommodates a lot of the different proofs and a lot of the different issues is that really it's a combination of both. That really Shabbos is about the Gavra, for lack of a better term. It really is defined by whether or not you are at rest. But malacha has its own definition. Malacha is defined by how it impacts on the world. So therefore, Shabbos is about your not doing malacha. But what is a malacha? A malacha is defined not by how it affects you, but how it affects the world. So we mentioned, for example, that Rav Zevin said a proof to his perspective that it's about the world more than it's about you is the Rishonim call Otsah Malach Geruah. They say that Otsah is a lousy malach. So why is it a lousy malach? What's different about it? If we look at the effort of the individual, you're working very hard. You're carrying a piano outside. You're working just as hard as any other malach. It's only a lousy malacha because it impacts the world in a less obvious way than the other 38 malachas. So as Devin said, you see, we look at the impact, not at the effect on the person, we look at the effect on the world. So our suggestion was that it's both relevant, because yes, in terms of defining what a malacha is, what makes our list, then yes, we look at the impact on the world. But what's the Isser on Shabbos? The Isser on Shabbos, not Torah, is for you to do a malacha. So if you have somebody else do the malacha on your behalf, on a Torah level, that's still not going to be an issue. That was the general structure that we had suggested. And we said based on that, it could explain two other issues. One, why is it that the Torah conveyed the concept of Shabbos the way that it did? And that doesn't list the malachos. It just tells us don't do malacha. And then we're left to a whole elaborate structure in Tamar Shemal Peh to figure out what the malachos are. We have one source that the malachos are separated from each other, another source that there are 39 of them, and another source that we should look to the Mishkan to find out what they should be. All of the details are left to Torah Shebaal-Peh to convey to us. And then the Isser is just don't do Malacha. So that is consistent with the structure that we've been saying, that the Torah really wants us not to do Malacha. That's what Shabbos is about. We should be at rest, not doing Malacha. How do you violate this din? There are 39 different ways, but it all essentially is one principle. And that's what Torah Shebaal-Peh is then telling us, the different ways in which that plays out. And then, again, we also noted that's why, when it comes to a malacha, you generally have two aspects to it. On the one hand, we have a pu'ula, we have an action. On the other hand, we also have a goal, we have a tachlis, a change that we are trying to impose upon the world. And usually both of those are relevant to figuring out how the malacha is regulated. So, for example, we start with the malacha of Zareya. So there is an action and there is a goal, and we need to figure out what they are, how they impact each other, are they one and the same, are they two different things, etc., etc. So is everyone basically up to speed in terms of all of that introductory discussion? Any questions on that? Make sense? Okay, if anybody has any questions, please don't hesitate either now or afterwards. Just want to make sure everybody is clear on everything. Yes?
Does that mean that we're choosing the side of purely an issue? There's no issue. I mean, it's about your side.
I think the weight of the Achronish approach is that there's no shlichus. I think the majority view favors that. Certainly, there are those who disagree. But I think we find a strong trend in the later literature to favor that view.
All the Nachmanides that we mentioned, we would choose the side
of that. I would think so, again, for the most part. Again, now, shlichus is usually going to involve Nesed Rabbanan.
Right.
So it's usually going to be prohibited, but that may, knocking it down to a Rabbanan already makes a big difference. So, for our intents and purposes, now we'll say it's most likely the side that is favored. Okay, so when it comes to focusing on the malacha of Zareya, so started to ask yesterday, so the first step with every malacha is going to be just try to translate it into English. Try to put it into a phrase or into a word. What is this malacha about? So if we try to translate the malacha of Zareya and threw that question out, so what is it? How do we translate that into English? So there were a few suggestions yesterday. One suggestion means that it was seeding, and we saw that could possibly be it. What was another suggestion that was made yesterday? Like encouraging growth. That might be the definition as well. We'll see. Already, those two possibilities address two halves. One was about an action, and one was about a goal. So it could be they're both the right answer, but maybe seeding might be the right answer as far as what the action is, and encouraging growth might be what our goal is. And we also mentioned something that we have to be aware of is going to come up a lot in this sugya, is that encouraging growth can be qualitative or it can be absolute. You could have something that's growing already and you want to make it grow more or better. Or you could have something which is not growing at all and you're causing it to grow. Are they both relevant or is only one relevant? And that's an important question to keep in mind. That's also going to have a big impact on how different things play out. So we started to raise the question yesterday of the shear for Zareya. What should the shear be? And we also saw in our introductory discussion that shear is an important issue. Because shear, even though very often, especially we talk about the grovers, talk about a dried fig, it's a very small amount anyway. So practically, shear very often has a minimal effect on our lives because it's often hard to do less than the shear. But what the shear is tells us a lot about what the malacha is about. And yesterday we spent some time on the Tosus over here that raises the question of why the Mishnah in general doesn't tell us the shear of the malacha. That's a discussion later. Very often it's not in the Gemara at all. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But it's usually not in the Mishnah. It's not in that first Mishnah. But the Mishnah does say certain malachos, hakosei sheosios, etc. Certain malachos, it mentions the aspect of two. And Tosfos to raise the question, why is that? And we discuss the approach that a lot of Sfarim have, that this is a core definitional issue. That other shiurim are matters of significance. You do something at a too low of a level, so it's an action, but it's not a significant action. And in fact, the Rashbam of Baba Basra said it's an act, it's a deficiency in Malachas Mashevet. It's not considered important enough. While these malachos, such as weaving Orei Shehut and weaving less than two strands, it's not just that it's not significant. It's lacking in the definition of the act. On some level, that's not called Orei. So if that's true, and then that might be, as Rabbi Nezer pointed out, so less than a shear in general is an issue of Machshavas. Less than two strands is an issue of Malachas. It's not a malach. The malach is defined by a certain combination of things. So when we talk about a shear, it's very relevant to understanding what the malach is about. So when it comes to Zoraya, we find that there is a debate. The Gemara is not clear about it. And there is a debate about what is the malacha of Zoraya. As we mentioned yesterday, in general, as a general policy, it's always safe. If somebody asks you what the story is, you usually safe if you say it's a machlokes. Here, you're safe, but you should be aware that it's a machlokes, and then it's a machlokes if it's a machlokes. Because it could be that different views that look like you're arguing, later Sfarim say they're not really arguing. What are the two possible views that we see here? So on the one hand, we have the possibility that it is a grogris, right, which is generally the standard for the first 11 malachas. Sidur of the Pots mostly is regulated by a grogris. So we find Rashi, who seems to clearly take this stance, emphasis on the seems to, because if we look at other Rashis, we see it's far less clear. But Rashi on the Mishnah seems to be telling us that yeah, it's a grogris. Why? Because the last line of that same Mishnah we looked at that tells us about Sidur Depas not being Sidur Depas. And we said that Reb Haigon is the one who would have a Sidur Depas because Lechem HaPanim is relevant to him, because things that went on in the Mishkan are relevant to the Malachos. But according to Rashi, it's not relevant because only construction of the Mishkan is defining of the Malachos. So in that same Rashi, in the end of the Rashi, so he says, Shiur and Sho'elu, this whole Sidur of the Pas, which I don't agree exists, but this whole first 11 Malachos, Shiur and Sho'elu kigrogris. All of them are grogris. Chutz me choresh. With the exception of plowing of choresh, that's kolshul. And that, because the Mishnah later on says it's a kolshul. Any amount of plowing is a liable, culpable violation of choresh. So it sounds like Rashi is clearly saying here that Zoray is included in the grogris list. Basic mathematics. These 11 minus 1 includes apparently Zoray. Yes, sir?
Is grogris a shear that's from a drasha? Why is it?
Oh, so that's also a part of the question. Shearim in general, as the Gemara tells us, shearim in general are halakha motion yisina. There's some who understand it a little bit differently. But we basically understand that the shiurim for everything, whether we talk about kezias by eating or all other shiurim, they are derived through tradition, that or not derived, they passed on through tradition. Essentially, that the Moshe transmitted at Har Sinai, that's spelling out in the Chumash what these measurements are. But because it's not spelled out in the Chumash, that leaves room for a little bit of ambiguity sometimes. So here, the assumption seems to be that there is a food concept here. This is about planting food, so to speak. And therefore, using a food shear of grogris is a relevant definitional tool. And that aspect, you'll see, will come up in a second. So if it's true that Rashi says that it's a grogris, so then he is in a machlokus with the Rambam. Because the Rambam and many others, like the Tal, all assume that the shear for Zaria is kolshul. Any amount of Zaria, anything you put in the ground with the intent to have it grow, is already a culpable violation of this malach. So if there is such a machlokes, so what defines this machlokes? So we mentioned yesterday that you could take the position that this directly comes out of what we've been talking about till now. What are we paying attention to? But are we paying attention to the individual doing something? Or are we paying attention to the result? And usually this is a little paradoxical, because usually you put in a lot of effort and you have to get the result disproportionate. Here, the effort is, it goes the other way around, because you can get a lot of result with a little bit of effort. Because when you plant something, it grows into something much, much bigger. So a tiny amount of investment in a karka is going to bring about something significant. So that's how we got it, so everyone understands what the Rambam is saying, that they cut you off.
How practically would it be a share of a
very practical. That's what we were saying before. There's very limited impact on our lives for some of these shiurim. Sometimes it's more practical, sometimes it's less practical. But the shiur discussions are usually more relevant for telling us other aspects of what the malacha is about. It's very hard to be less than these shiurim in some of these cases. Not all of them, in some of the cases. Yes, sir.
Is it possible to, you know, to encourage growth with half a seed? Like, why wouldn't it work?
I mean, biologically?
It totally wouldn't work at all, or?
You could ask the botanist. I guess there's probably a minimum amount that you need in order to have a structure for it to grow. But then you really have to work hard to have half a seed. I don't know if that's physically something you can bring about. But in any event, so the perspective seems to be, the reason we say a shear is called shalut is because pretty much any amount can bring us something significant when we talk about planting. So we should, in theory, if we're worried about the result, certainly say that a very small investment is going to give us a big turnout, a big return. So there are those who suggest that that's the issue here, that those who say there's no shear are looking at the fact that it's going to turn into something big. And those who say there is some type of shear is assuming that it's not significant for the individual. If it's such a small amount, the individual is not going to pay attention to it. That's why it's lacking. How are you?
People who say that it's not a shear, but eventually, and that eventually will be big, is that really that it is a shear, just not the size of the shear now?
So then what is the conceptual significance of that? Where you're basically saying that really there is a shear. Right? It's just that it's easy to get the shear because it's going to get bigger. So then it's not that there's no shear, but that essentially the shear, for all intents and purposes, is nothing.
No.
That's what it could mean. Which also, as we'll see, there's also some discussion, what does it mean we say culture? Right? Culture, we've been translating until now, with no shear. That might not be an accurate translation. A culture who could be translated as saying culture literally anything. So it could mean that there's no shear. Or it could mean that culture is a shear. It's just a shear that's so small we can't get any smaller than that. So it's not that there's no shear, it's just that the shear is not worth talking about because it's essentially tiny.
What's the difference?
So the question is, are relevant at least conceptually to an idea of a chatzi shear. So for example, there was, you saw the Rashi and Krisos in the Narmakomos, and so Rashi there makes reference to a chatzi shear of Zriel. So you might say, okay, so there's proof that there is a shear. It's proof that Rashi holds as a grover's, because if it was a culture, he wouldn't talk about a chatzi shear.
Right.
So you could say, no, maybe the shear is just infinitesimal. So at least there's a conceptual idea of a chatzi shear. It's not practically relevant, but at least we could talk about it as a concept, because it exists. And we'll mention that because you brought it up. So as some Svarim point out, they kind of have to say like that in that Rashi, because Rashi also talks about Harisha v'chatzi shir. And here, we said Harisha for sure is a culture. So maybe there is some sense to talking about a chatzi shir of a culture. That maybe even if practically you can't do it, but at least the language makes sense on some level, there is such a thing. It is some type of a shir. So there are those who suggest that maybe this is machlokus between Rashi and the Rambam, that Rashi is focusing on what you're doing, and the Rambam is focusing on the result. Now, if the Rambam is focusing on the result, that's all very well and good for us, because we saw from the first day that the Rambam in Mishnah Torah, when he lists the malachos, focuses on results. Right? He deviates from the Mishnah. The Mishnah who says, Hazareya v'hachorei, she writes, Harisha Zriya, etc. So it works out well. But then put everyone else in his camp, since the majority in this case is clearly with the Rambam, the culture, and maybe even Rashi, gets a little bit more of a stretch. for the Rambam. Maybe it works, that the Rambam is indeed focused on the result, both in general and specifically here, and therefore you can get a big result with a small investment.
So culture works. Hi. If you're saying everyone's holding like a Rambam on this one, but we know that pretty much Rav Posner were against Rav Zevin.
That's what I'm saying. It's a stretch for everyone else. I think so. I think if you want to say that it's here for the Rambam, it's consistent, but to say that's the broad picture here for everyone, I think is a little bit of a stretch. So just from a Svara perspective, again, you don't have a clear Gemara source as to what it should be. And if you look at some of the other Rashis that are on the Mar Makomos, you'll see that Rashi is not so clear in other places that he thinks that the grove is. And it sounds like from some of the other places, the Rashi does think it's significantly less than that. So there are many later Svarim who suggest that it has to be this culture. For various reasons. For example, because this Lebroy Rashi from Kavrin in the Sanderich says, what's the whole idea of a grogris? Not everything's a grogris. Right? Not all malachos are grogris. So what malachos are grogris? So Siddur de Pas malachos for the most part. Why? What's special about them? Right. So some others as well. Right? But what's the key to making something a grogris? Seems to be, you said the word, a food connection. So it's the malachos that are about food. So that's where the grogris comes in. So he maintains that it doesn't make sense to say grogris for Zriya. Sorry. Because grogris is not about food. I'm sorry, Zriya is not about food. Zriya, he maintains, is something that you do to the land. It is an avodas karka. And therefore, why should we define it by a food standard? If it was about other Siddur D'Pas things, harvesting, collecting, threshing. In those cases, we are acting upon food. So we'll use a food standard. But planting, he maintains, is not about food, it's about what you do to the land.
You really know about choresh. Choresh is kosher.
Right, so choresh, again, is the exception, because choresh is avodas karka. So there are those who maintain that just from a logical perspective, it doesn't make sense to put Zoraya in the grogris camp, and therefore Rashi probably also doesn't mean that. Yes?
I don't understand it, because you can't really say you have food until you're at the final stage anyway. It's nothing before the final stage of bread is edible. We even said it could be that all
assuming
they were
talking about bread.
Right, it could be based on just where it dies.
Right,
so what
are
dyes?
Dyes are about vegetables. Right, the dyes are from food that's food from the beginning.
Okay, but nothing's really edible until you're...
Well, vegetables are. They're
edible. So they're definitely edible vegetables and not just plants that aren't necessarily edible?
No, they can include other plants also, but we could be working off the standard of edible vegetables. Once we talk about that, then we could include other things, even though in some cases it's going to be taka discussion. But we can say that primarily, what's this malacha driven by? It's driven by bringing about vegetables, let's say. So if that's the case, so when we're harvesting them, when we're gathering them, when we're threshing them, we're dealing with fruit. We're dealing with food. So all of those actions are food actions. So fine, let grogris be the standard. But when you're planting is something you do to the land, he maintains. You don't have to agree with that. We'll see that's possibly a little bit of a discussion. But if that's the case, it seems not to make sense that grogris should be the standard. The Arugas HaBosan, Pukparav, who also has a lengthy discussion of Malachos in his Sefer, he also thinks Rashi can't mean that it's a grogris. He thinks Rashi also has to be with Rambam on this, that it's a kosher. So the question is, if you maintain that Rashi does not think it's a grogris, just from a reading perspective, what do we do with our Rashi? Is there a way to make our Rashi make sense on the Mishnah? Rashi, if no one had bothered us, this Rashi would seem very clear. And if no one had pulled us into this whole fight, it really sounds like Rashi is saying grogris. Everything's grogris except for choresh. Is there a way to read Rashi differently? Possibly in a way that may have some conceptual
significance?
Just like we said, that if he says everything in Ha'elu, referring to Siduris Apas,
mm-hmm.
so Zareya, if we don't count that Siduris Apas, so that wouldn't include that.
So you're saying that he's excluding Choresh, not just from the standard, but from Sidur Depas. You're saying Sidur Depas is not the first 11,
so
it's number 3 through 11. And you're excluding now not just one of them, but two of them from the list, which is a little bit of a chiddush. Yes, sir?
The only thing with that is Zoraya would go with Choresh.
So but that might be the point. So maybe that's
what
you... Right, so how could you... So when he, when Rashi's language essentially says that except for Choresh, and he doesn't say to us except for Choresh and Zoraya, which leaves us thinking that Zoraya is not an exception. So these Achronim are all saying, no, he means to exclude Zoraya also. So our question then is, well, then why can he say that? Why doesn't he say Chutzme Choresh v'Zoraya? Yes, sir?
Could be that there's a Maisa Harisha that's also Zoraya.
It absolutely could be.
And therefore, when he says Choresh, he's referring to any Avulach that would have something to do with that action of Harisha.
Yeah, it's a fascinating approach. I was thinking of about 3 or 4 different approaches, and I wasn't thinking of that one. But you're raising an important point, because it is true, we'll see, that there is a Harisha that might qualify as a Zriya. If we define Zriya, let's say, as anything encouraging growth, then there might be some significant overlap between Harisha and Zriya. So there is some truth to that. So if you want to say that Rashi is using it as an umbrella term for Harisha and Zriya, that would make it work. I was thinking of a few other approaches, but that's possibly something worth examining.
So if we want to say that maybe he was just referring to 3 through 11 and anything before that means to do it in the past, so we'd only have to say step number 2, and that would imply everything before.
Right, that's basically the end of the sentence you're saying before, which is what some suggest, I think they were supposed to essentially say like that. That what he means is when he says chutz me chorish, he means everything after chorish. So 1 and 2 are before chorish, so therefore everything after is a different standard. But we're excluding both chorish and zoreh. Now that's also an important conceptual question, because it could be, and we'll discuss this more with Dr. Choresh, that Zoraya and Choresh are linked to each other. That maybe Harisha and the Gemara, if you saw the Gemara and Rangim on the base, see the Gemara has a whole discussion whether or not we should be starting with Zoraya today. If we want to start with the first Malacha, so maybe we should start with Choresh. And the Gemara says it has to do with the difference between Eretz Yisrael and Babel in terms of what they did first. But there's a lot of conceptual significance, because Choresh, plowing, might be defined as preparing for Zriya. So therefore, maybe it should have been first. And maybe the two Malachas define each other to a certain extent. The fun game, there's many different Svarim that are written on the Malachas. See which one of them start talking about Zoraya first, and which one of them start talking about Choresh. So it's a little bit of a conceptual question. It's an issue our Gemara deals with a little bit. Right? Gemara and I'm Gimel Beis picking up on that question. Why is the Mishnah starting with Zoraya? And if you look at the Rambam, you see the Rambam switches it. The Rambam, when he lists the Malachas, because we focused on how he phrases them, but he also switches the order. The first Malach the Rambam lists is Harisha. And the Gemara asks why it is that the Mishnah doesn't do that. So what Malach do you want to talk about first when we're taking a stand in this issue, the fact that we're talking about Zoraya first? So there is some kind of close partnership between Zoraya and Choresh, and therefore maybe what this Mishnah, what this Rashi is saying is when I exclude Choresh, you're supposed to understand that I'm excluding Zoraya also. Yes, sir?
But if we take that answer that really Choresh is supposed to be before Zoraya, not that it's sort of interchangeable, that kind of takes away what we said about Rugas Agosin, because he would not be able to suggest that everything from step 2 and before it, because he'd only be saying step 1 would be...
Well, it comes to, it's looking at the same thing. He's saying that the Rashi just tells you what's listed after this, because he's combining the two, essentially. Or not really combining, because they're clearly two different Avos, but he's made them.
Okay.
I think it's consistent there. So there are essentially different readings, so just if you want to know some of the other approaches, why it is that Rashi, if you hold that Rashi thinks there's no machlokas here, Rashi holds kosher, why would he give you this strange language? So either because he means everything from this point on, as you said, or he is combining Harisha and Zriya into one, which is a little harder to say, but there is some truth to it in terms of how Harisha is defined. Or some suggest that he's emphasizing Harisha because Harisha, the Mishnah tells us explicitly, is kosher.
And that, I think, I put on the list. Gimel. So the Mishnah says explicitly that Harisha is B'kol Shehu. So therefore, Rashi, when he tells us about this, that yeah, Mishnah Kuf Gimel at Aleph, HaChoresh Kol Shehu. So when Rashi points out an exception, he's using the exception which the Mishnah tells us explicitly. And he wants you to understand that Zareh is going to follow Choresh. Rashi writes, and say it for Shabbos, he has a different approach. He thinks that really there is a shear for Zareh, but it's less than a Grover's. You know, like we said before, Grover's shouldn't be the standard. Maybe it should be a few seeds. You saw it as Machlokas, how many seeds? But if you saw in the Marmar Komos, the Gemara talks, the Mishnah talks about carrying on Shabbos. So different standards are used on Tzadi Aleph. Different standards are used for significance in carrying. So if somebody wants to carry seeds, the plan. So the whole discussion, how many seeds he has to carry. So it could be that's really the shear. The shear is not a Grover's, nothing happening. It's a few seeds. So it's not nothing, and it's not a Grover's. It's somewhere in the middle. It's a handful of seeds. But because it's so close to a Grover's at this point, halakha l'maaseh, you're not going to have any real space of relevance. So it's not worth Rashi saying everything else, Harisha is kosher, everything else is Grover's. And Zariah is somewhere in between, closer to a Grover's. It wasn't worth the extra explanation, since for all intents and purposes, it seems to basically play out the same way. And that's how he suggests. So essentially, you have, on the one hand, the prima donna. The prima donna is certainly a very prominent voice, assuming this is a machlokas Rashi in the Rambam. But many of the later svarim feeling that the kol shehu standard is a much more logical standard, so much so that Rashi presumably agrees, and finding different ways to read this Rashi so that there doesn't have to be a machlokas. You're good.
I just have two issues with the answer that you've given so far. Mm-hmm. Choresh must include Zariah because it's the purpose of Choresh is Zariah, but like, it still seems like a jump. Like, it still just says flat out in Paragavona that Choresh is the shear is Kol Shehu.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say anything about Zariah. Had it, had you wanted to talk about Zariah, probably would have just said Zariah. It just seems like a huge jump.
Well, it's not so much a question on the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is talking about Choresh. So the Mishnah doesn't have to explain there that it's also true about Zariah. The question is really Rashi. The Mishnah is okay. It's really why Rashi here, and commenting on this Rashi, and commenting on this Mishnah, why does Rashi not exclude Zareya also? So it's true that the simple reading of Rashi, if nobody else had bothered us, would have been that it's a Grover's. But there is this feeling that the logic is so clearly on the other side that we have to find some way to read Rashi a little bit less obviously, a little bit less the way that it would have sounded by itself. But I think you're right. That's the question on Rashi. It seems like if Rashi wanted to exclude that, again, I don't think the Mishnah is a powerful question because the Mishnah is in a different context, the Mishnah and Kuf Gimel. But in terms of Rashi, it's a powerful question. Rashi didn't phrase it in the way that's most obvious to make his point. But we have to either accept this view or not.
But also, according to Usher Weiss, he says that it might be more than a Grover's.
No, less than a Grover's. It's more than a Kol Shehu, meaning it's not nothing. It's a few seeds. And a few seeds.
A
Grover's is a fig. It's a dried
fig. Okay.
So it's a little bit less than that Grover's, but it's close enough to a Grover's that it wasn't worth Rashi explaining the difference, essentially.
I'm trying to make sense of Rashi by saying that Mishnah Kapimo said that Harisha's Kosho. Mm-hmm. So he's bringing an example, but it's already known to us.
It's explicit. He's mentioning what's already in Shas.
So wouldn't it make some more sense to
tell us what we don't know?
To tell us straight what we don't know.
I hear it. It's a valid point. And since Rashi should assume we know all Shas and Shnai's Bahar, so that we know where it doesn't have to tell us. And that which is not in the Mishnah, right? He gets to a whole question of what Rashi's purpose in general is. Is Rashi there in general to tell us sheepless, his own sheepless, or is he there to explain the background that we don't know? Saying here, not just like a general question of what different Rashis do different things, but here this Rashi is saying he's giving us a background essentially that we couldn't know already if we knew Shas Mishnayos. We'd rather have to the sheet of what is not spelled out than what is spelled out. So fair point. Again, all of this, I don't think the right or wrong answer as far as what's more credible. I think you have the right to feel one explanation is more credible than the other. And again, the Prima Donna is with you that this is that Rashi is saying it's a Grover's. There are many others who felt that it's not logical that it should be a Grover, so they got to find a different way to do it.
Because considering this is like such a like a considerable difficulty, like the Pashtus of Rashi. Is there anyone that suggests maybe conservative, that, like, I mean, somewhere along the line there was a misprint in Rashi?
I think all these suggestions are stopping just short of that. Not saying it's a misprint, but saying that it's not fully spelling out what you mean. What are you saying? So that, you don't have to call it a misprint, but say that it's not as explicit as it could be. Okay, so, hi.
Where does Rav Asher Weiss base his opinion from? He just says that it's not actually Groger, it's in between, it's, you know, like...
Right, because he thinks it's basically, it's from as far as all of these formulas that coming from Scar. So it says it thinks to me, it seems to make sense, but say perhaps this could be considered the other side of what we said before, that if the explanation is true, that if we focus on the individual, we would say it's about significance of, let's say, a few Z's. So then he's saying, okay, where do we find the source for what's significant? We find that in terms of the Mishnah and Hamasnia about what you're carrying. Okay, so that's a better evidence. So, okay, that really makes sense to be what it's about. So now we've got to figure out why doesn't Rashi say that? Okay, he doesn't say that because it wasn't worth the...
Right, because so said that one seed is significant. You can plant a tree.
Correct. Significant from the effect. Significant from the actor. And if we said that many assume that we focus on the actor, so then it's a little more than one seed. You wouldn't bother for one seed. Okay, so another step, just want to mention, in terms of what is significant for the act of Zriya. So you may have seen the Yerushalmi, you mentioned it also because it's relevant to the larger halacha questions. You mentioned it earlier. The Yerushalmi has a long list of actions that are included within Zareya. Our Gemara has a few halacha questions to talk about. Other actions which we're showing it to a whole fight are either all avos or one denav and the rest are tolos, or most of them are avos and one tolos. But Yerushalmi has a longer list. And the Yerushalmi has this principle that kol shehu mavchil es ha-pri, anything that essentially is going to upkeep the fruit, the produce, even if it's not advancing, but it's protecting it. Anything that is protective, including, for example, maglia, which means you're going to take out worms. If there are worms inside your fruit, you're going to have them removed. So that is an act of Zoreya according to Yerushalmi. Which is very interesting. Because there's a concept in halacha called Mavriyat Ari. This is something that Rona adds. That Mavriyat Ari means you're chasing away a lion. Which is essentially a negative action. You have a lion that's threatening your property, you chase him away. So that's not a constructive act, that is essentially protecting the status quo. So in many areas of halacha, mavriyach ari, protecting the status quo rather than doing something constructive, is not considered to be significant. So why is it that an act like kicking out worms from the fruit would be considered zareya? That's an interesting concept. That's a chiddush. That's a whole new gathering. So apparently, some of the later svarim suggest that the malacha here is defined as consistent with what we said a few minutes ago, as an avodas karka, you are acting upon the field, you're acting upon your source of growth, and anything that you do to act upon that, that is in the interest of protecting the growth and either encouraging or protecting the growth, is going to be considered an act of zore. Which opens up a few interesting questions. So apparently acting upon the karka, anything you do that acts upon your field of occupation, your field both literally and figuratively, your scope, anything you do that acts upon that in the interest of keeping the produce growing and stopping it from not growing, all of that is subsumed within Zareya. And we mentioned earlier that that's consistent with our gathera focus. Because even though, from the perspective of the result is not being advanced here, it's just being held in place. But your effort is still the same. You are acting upon this land to do something, so it's considered to be a malacha.
Whereas
considered to be this malacha. Sorry?
Whereas chasing the lion away is not, you're not doing anything to the land.
Right. The land is basically, if the lion had never been there in the first place, the lion would have been in the same condition. So that provokes the whole discussion, how far do you take this? So there's a number of questions that could come up. For example, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein is a great well-known posek today, so he has in his sefer on Shabbos, he raises the question. So we talk about madliya. If your shami talks about you taking out worms, so how, in order to violate zoreya as defined by taking out the worms, so how many worms do I have to take out? Do I have to take out all the worms? What if I just take out one worm? Is it any act of taking out a worm? Or is it that essentially this is more broadly defined? This is defined as removing the hezek, you know, removing the damage. And if I am leaving most of the damage there, I'm leaving 9 out of 10 worms there, maybe that's not called madliya. So it's an interesting question, which also plugs into this whole issue. So is this all defined by my doing any action towards this goal? Or could we define this more impact-based and say that, okay, so fine, we're already willing to stretch and include what looks like mavriach ari, you know, what looks like something that's essentially just protective, and we're willing to include that. How far are we going to go? Are we going to say that it has to be completely protecting it? Or even if the action that you're doing is not effective in protecting it, because you're still leaving 9 out of 10 of the invaders there, it's still malach. That's an interesting question, which has practical ramifications, also has ramifications in terms of understanding how far we're willing to go with this idea. He also, Tzipei Safrank has a tshuva. Tzipei Safrank was the great Rebbe of Yerushalayim who died in the 60s. So Tzipei Safrank has a discussion about a certain moshav or kibbutz, that they must have been holding up the slaves because they were afflicted by locusts. And Arba essentially imposed upon them. And the question was, could they spray in the air to keep away the locusts? And there are other different malachos which might be relevant, we'll get up to. But it doesn't seem to feel like it's an issue of Zoreya. It might possibly be other malachos. But it doesn't seem to feel like it's Zoreya. So the question is, why not? So what's the difference? What would you say is the difference between taking worms out and spraying for locusts? Huh?
It's like with the lion, you're just like putting in case they come, it'll deter them. But it's not that they're actually here, now we're taking them out.
So the issue is definite versus suffix?
Right, it would be like, it's not quite like taking a can of bug spray and spraying on a bug you see. It's like spraying around the corners of your house and waiting for them to come in to die.
So which part are you focusing on, the corners, or are you focusing on the fact?
So in this case, the locust would be like spraying on the corners, you're like waiting for them to come hit it, not that you're actually aiming to kill a specific one.
I think the point that maybe to be emphasized when you're saying, maybe this is what Aaron's going to say, is that this is an external thing which is not part of your package, right? You're pulling the worms out of the apples, so the worms are in there. So now you're taking away this damaging force. Here, to have an animal come from the outside, which would be a more literal translation of Madriya Tari. So that really is taka something else. That really taka isn't Zoreya. That's you're not acting upon the character, you're not acting upon the fruit to protect it. You are standing guard outside and keeping it away. That's already outside the definition of what's considered to be Zoreya. I think that's what you're getting at. Okay.
It wouldn't be Borer anyways.
So would it be Borer? That's a good question. So maybe it would be Borer, at least Borer in terms of the locusts or in terms of the worms. So it's a good question whether that's Borer. It might overlap with Borer, and therefore it may have elements of both. Not necessarily. We have to figure out whether or not it fits. When we get into Borer, we'll talk about whether or not it fits into the category or not. But I thought for a second you're mentioning the other point, because the question of one worm versus all the worms is also relevant to why I compare it to Borer. So what if you have an open discussion? When it comes to Borer, what if you take away some of the psalmists? Not all of the psalmists. So does Borer mean taking away, making it psalmist free? Or does it mean leaving, removing any degree of psalmist? And that is relevant also for what degree we want to have all the two questions. Hi.
So this question, would it also depend on whether we say about doing part of the malacha even though it's not finished, like some of the remarks we're talking about? You throw the seed in before it's hashrasha.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So would that also be an issue because you're taking out the worm, but you're not?
It's an interesting question. The problem is here, are we talking about a part that's on the way to finishing, or a part that may not necessarily be on the way to finishing? Let's say you have no intention of taking out all the worms. I'm going to take out one worm and leave it that way.
So it's not exactly comparable to this rear question where you're setting something in motion. We'll see what's going to happen here. It's simply incomplete. And maybe it's incomplete in a way, this also gets into our whole sheer discussion from yesterday, whole sheer room discussion, that maybe it's not just incomplete, but it's incomplete in a way that's nothing. Because if the whole purpose of this is to make the food free of damaging forces, and you haven't done that, it had damaging forces before, it has damaging forces now. So the fact that you did one step toward that might not be relevant. So perhaps also relevant to this, for example, with Mr. Corellis, great contemporary posse, has a sefer on Shabbos, that let's say you have a water running on your field. You have a tap, a faucet, hose, is running, not the hose, I think that's in the wall, but the faucet that's pouring water onto your field, and it's too much. I'm afraid it's going to now drown your field. So is turning that off an act of zareya? Because you're interested in turning it off so that it doesn't interfere with the growth. Right, so we know we'll talk about adding water for the purpose of growth as an issue. What about stopping the water from coming? So he takes it for granted that's not an issue. He doesn't think that turning off the water, that's essentially also external. You don't want the water to come on top of it to drown the field. That's essentially also not acting on the character. That's an external force. He doesn't think there would be any problem with turning off that water. Right.
With the case of removing the worms,
mm-hmm.
you're saying that that shows that it's more the outcome than what the person does?
It could show that. It could be tying into the whole question. You could say it a couple of different ways. But you could say that, all right, the fact that we're talking about removing worms as a whole seems to show that we focus on the person more than the effect, because this is not advancing growth. This is just leaving the status quo. But because you are making an effort towards preserving the status quo, it becomes significant. So it seems to be that it's focusing more on you than on the impact. Then within that question, and once we recognize that as relevant, so then it's also a question that maybe we should say you have to actually have that impact. You have to actually completely clear away all the worms. Or maybe no, then maybe go even farther and say any effort towards doing that is also... That involves 2 points of focusing on you, because even if you do the whole job, it's not going to advance the growth. It's just going to stop the problem. And you're not even doing that. You're just contributing to it. So to say that that's an issue, to say that removing one worm is a malacha, is a double focus on the individual, essentially. That might have to be true. Okay, so essentially, this just gets us up, I only have a few minutes left, this just gets us up to the surface of the major, major fight as to the essence of Zriya. And this is a major fight, really it's a fight in the Rishonim. The Egli Tal maintains it's a fight in the Rishonim. And it's posting throughout and taking up this issue. But there's a certain mazel to every issue, the mazel to inventions, right? Somebody who invents something isn't always the first person who thought about it, isn't always the best person who thought about it, but it gets associated with the thing. So too, this Machlokas happened before, happened after, but the famous participants in this Machlokas are the Rashash and the Menhasim. And we'll have to talk about it mostly tomorrow, it's a very involved discussion, but we'll just set it up, and again, you'll see the same question, so if we talk about it today, we'll be probably on this issue. It's also interesting, so if we focus on the Rashash and the Mechassinu as the parties in this debate, as so much of literature does, they are almost exact contemporaries. I think the Mechassinu lived from around 1800 to 1874 or so, and the Rashash is 1796 to 1794, is around 1872. So they're almost exact contemporaries. And they took very, very different sides on the following issue. If we were to define Zareya as causing a seed to sprout, we have a major technical problem. And there are many different ways in which you can phrase this problem, but essentially the elements of the problem are as such. It's taken for granted, and the details of the botany involved are whatever they are, but from a, even just from a Shas perspective, it's sounds clearly from proofs in the Gemara elsewhere that it takes at least 3 days for that to happen. Could take a lot more. But it takes at least 3 days for a seed that's put into the ground to take root. So that being the case, we have a major technical issue when it comes to defining what it means to plant them. Because if I were to take a seed and put it on this table, so everyone would agree that's not planted. It's not going to connect to anything. It's not sprouting in any way. It'll stay here for 20 years. I guess depending on the facilities, it'll stay here for 20 years without ever changing. So putting a seed in something is not called planting. But if I put a seed in the soil, apparently it's not going to take root either. There's not going to be any difference between the seed in the soil and the seed on this table for the first 3 days. Now, 3 days, by definition, is always going to be longer than however much possessor Shabbos you're piling on to your Shabbos. So essentially, it is impossible for you to put a seed in the ground and have it take root on Shabbos. And if it doesn't take root, so then what's the difference between putting it in the soil and putting it on this table, putting it in a Diet Pepsi can? In all these circumstances, it hasn't taken root. So that creates a fundamental issue. How is it that one can violate the malacha of Zriya on Shabbos? Either we're going to have to say, we're tugging both ends, either we're going to say that it can't take place on Shabbos, in which case you're telling me I'm violating malacha after Shabbos, which is very difficult to say, possibly impossible to say. Or you're telling me that I violate the malacha somehow, even though I'm not really doing it. Even though the seed is in no different condition than if I left it on the table. So this is a major technical issue.
Yes, sir? Couldn't you just say that just conceptually that the fact that it's on the table,
mm-hmm.
20 years from now, it'll still be on the table.
Right.
But in the ground, it won't be that way. It'll be different.
Correct.
In less time. Meaning you know...
So however much time it is...
The fact is that even though, you know, it takes 3 days for there to be, you know, the hashrasha for it to actually root,
mm-hmm.
the fact is that there's already some process that started immediately. And
oh,
even though there might not be, meaning I'm saying even though there might not be any, you know, a substantial difference between putting it on the table and putting it in the ground, but the
mm-hmm.
fact is that on the table it will not root.
Right.
And, you know, so...
Right, clearly the answer lies in that difference.
Yeah.
The problem is still, do we have enough from that difference to work with? Because if something is happening after Shabbos, is that relevant to what happens on Shabbos? Are we opening a whole new avenue here, saying that my causing something to happen after Shabbos is going to be relevant to what I do on Shabbos? And just to flesh out the point of the question in a second, so one could draw a parallel here. Let's say, and this is going to be a major part of the discussion, so let's say, for example, I want to bake something on Shabbos. And in order to bake it, so I put it in the oven, it takes some period of time, and it becomes baked. So what would happen if, even though there I clearly could do this on Shabbos, but instead of doing the whole thing on Shabbos, I put it in the oven right before the end of Shabbos. And it doesn't become baked until after Shabbos. Am I liable for such a thing? Is such a thing a violation of Shabbos? Maybe. It's a huge machlokes. But the issue is that the Gemara, it sounds like from the Gemara like you're not. And that's one of the texts that has to be contended with. Because the Gemara and the Avdalah, which put on the Marmakomos, the Gemara discusses the following scenario, which is considered to be a major challenge to the whole Zriya construct. Says the Gemara, let's say somebody put something in the oven on Shabbos, not in the Shabbos, any time on Shabbos, put something in the oven on Shabbos. And then he goes to shul and he hears a great drasha that inspires him to stop sitting and going to become Shomer Shabbos. So he realizes, oh, but I put something in the oven. So the question is, it's an issur d'rabbanan to take bread out of the oven, which involves at that time taking it off the walls of the oven. That's an issur d'rabbanan. So normally you're not allowed to do that. But here, this guy has a conflict because he wants to violate, he wants to protect, he wants to observe the din d'rabbanan. But if he observes this din d'rabbanan of not taking the bread out, So he'll leave himself with a chiyuv, say tzgila, or a chiyuv chatas, because then he's going to finish baking this item. So the context of that gemara, the issue that gemara is interested in, is do we allow him to violate the drabbanan, a small avera, to save himself from the chiyuv tzgila, save himself from the yisur d'oreis? What's the implication of that? If we do allow it, so what does it seem to say? If you interrupt this process in the middle, you're okay. That's it.
Isn't that you're only okay for based on the Gemara about Torah Shemuka Shel Hatoria Almuka Tomemuka? Does the Gemara assume that this is you're just saving from a field of skila? Or
because it's not necessarily
you're not saving from the toilet here, then that's still be a lot.
You already did something wrong.
Right, we're just saving him from
it sounds like we're talking about at least the surah of the Yisr, that the Yisr is not fully violated. There's no case for you. You did an action. And now that action is in the past. So somehow you're taking this out. That should have been a chiyuv skila already, and now somehow you're able to interrupt it. So it sounds like the chiyuv skila doesn't happen until it's finished. That if you interrupt it in the middle, okay, but the punishment, the skila, is defined apparently by doing the whole action. So the implication is that you can interrupt the action in the middle, and it's not done. So if we apply that, if we transfer that over to Zriya, so then if I interrupt the Zriya in the middle, it shouldn't be done either. And it can't ever be finished on Shabbos. So how can I have a whole melacha? That sugya of Rediyas Hapas, of Chatek Nishiuska, the Daf Dalet sugya, is considered to be a major challenge to the whole construct of Zriya. Hi.
So according to the opinion of the Gemara, and I think Rosh Hash sort of mentioned something like that, isn't sort of a proof that Shabbos is really sort of, like the Rambam was saying, it's on the action that's happening, because of the fact that the person, whether or not I took it or off or not, is whether
right,
or not
you might, you might be correct in plugging this issue into that issue, and then you do assume that there is a overall connection between what's going to be this Machlok. We haven't said yet what the Rosh Hash says. We'll have to get to that tomorrow, but that it very possibly draws on this whole discussion. So God willing, we'll pick up on that tomorrow. Just to quickly review what we spoke about today. So we spoke about the question of what defines Zoraya. We talked about the issue of what is the shear of Zoraya. Rashi sounds very much like it's a grover's. And the Rambam and many others assume that it is a kol shu. So many others that later Achronim will be Rashi also agrees the kol shu. We mentioned that if Rashi does disagree, that one approach is the question of whether we're focusing on the result or focusing on the significance of the action. But if Rashi agrees that it's a kol shu, then the question is how do we reconcile that with his language? We mentioned a couple of different approaches, either that Harisha includes Zriya, or that Rashi only meant from Harisha on. It's not the grover's, but Harisha and Zriya are both exceptions. We've brought up a whole conceptual issue of the relationship between Zriya and Harisha, which is a major issue in defining those malachos, or the possibility that Rashi only focused on Harisha because the Mishnah explicitly mentions it, as opposed to Zriya, or Rav Asher Weiss's suggestion that really there is an individual focused shear of a few seeds, so Rashi didn't mention it because it wouldn't have much of a practical ramification. And then we focused on the fact that Rishami tells us that included in the acts of Zriya is anything that protects the produce, which normally would be considered to be an external kind of reconsideration, which may reflect something about Hilchos Shabbos in general, or may reflect something about Zriya being acting upon the karka regardless of how it produces things going further. And then we talked about some practical issues that come out of that. If, for example, removing worms is an issue, like Rishami suggests, so does that mean you have to remove all the worms and get rid of any problem, or any act of doing this is considered to be an issue as well? And we talked also about about getting rid of the locusts, so does that consider to be completely external, comparable to what Mr. Carroll talks about turning off a faucet and pouring too much water onto the field. And then we talked about essentially setting up this question, which we will see tomorrow as machlokas between the Rosh Hashan and the Chassidus. How do we define the act of Zriya when we know that Zriya, if it is only relevant when it leaves to Hashrasha, that can't take place on Shabbos? So how do we ever have a complete act of Zriya, especially in light of the Gemara in that valley, which seems to suggest in terms of baking, which looks on the surface like it's a parallel malacha to Zriya, and there it seems to be clear that you can interrupt it in the middle and you're off the hook.
So we should be able to say the same thing when it comes to Zriya, and since it never finishes on Shabbos, that creates a fundamental problem with Hanukkah. So we'll pick up on that tomorrow. Tomorrow is Wednesday, a normal day, so we'll see you then. Okay, Shkayev.
I can cover all these. Maybe Mary, you're